World Without Oil was an amazing project. It was innovative. It was smart. It promoted social issues. It hit all the marks of our mission. And plus, it was a game. And on top of that, it was an alternate reality game.
Alternate reality games are different from most computer games or most video games. The most important thing about them is that it's not role play, it's real play. You're not playing a character, you don't have a little 3D avatar. In the game, you're yourself. And you talk about your own life and your own everyday circumstances, except you talk about them as if the fiction of the game were true.
We are nearing the end of week 5 of the 2007 oil crisis.
People were able to participate in World Without Oil kind of through their favorite communication method. A lot of people blogged, other people made videos, there were a lot of people who just played by email. You could phone in.
We can rebuild the resources we had before, we just can't use oil.
And then people also created images or put together image series kind of showing what was going on in a world without oil.
I think the players made it a lot more interesting than we ever could. With all the different viewpoints, and you know, some wrote about how their lives really changed at all, then others had guns and built a wall around their city.
I decided to do a comic dealing with the problems and events that arose due to the oil shortage. I just sort of came up with the idea of being able to see it through the eyes of four regular college students that are just trying to get by.
ITVS's mission has always been to give unheard people a voice and also to spark public discourse about these subjects and to encourage public debate. And World Without Oil accomplished this in so many ways. It was a project that engaged people from all over the world. It broke down all kinds of borders. We had people who participated from Australia, the UK, Iraq, Japan, from all corners of the globe.
People were really dealing with their futures. That's the way they saw it. And they came to they brought that sort of earnestness to the game. They were engaged with this as an exercise in imagining a future, you know, playing it so that we don't have to live it.
Exclusively. So what we've done is converted most of our backyard and even part of the front yard into food production. So I'm going to take a second to show you that.
And so the power of having people live in this alternate reality is that they have to change the way they live their lives. They're not simulating it in a 3D immersive environment. They're simulating it in their own lives, changing how they commute to work, changing how they prepare dinner, how they go out on dates. And so an alternate reality game, it's not just thinking about change, it's actually making change, but in a really fun context where lots of other people around the world are making changes too.
The participation with World Without Oil was phenomenal. In just 32 days, we had over 1,500 submissions, and there were 60,000 participants from all over the globe.
I think we definitely showed that players will engage with serious issues. People will think about important topics, social topics, political topics that might not ordinarily engage them, but in the context of a game, they will engage.
Games just really have that ability to cut through differences, and we certainly saw that with World Without Oil, and I really hope that other organizations use that ability of games to essentially bring people of all different types together in kind of a shared environment, thinking about a common future. That's really the potential we were going for with World Without Oil.
Welcome to the Global Extinction Awareness System. You are watching Super Threat Number 1, Quarantine. In 2019, Respiratory Distress Syndrome, or REDS, is here, and it's not going anywhere. Outbreaks are just something we live with. Hardest hit, tropical and subtropical cities. GIST volunteers report from the front lines of the quarantine super threat. GIST volunteer Bergmontre reports on the recent arrival of a REDS relief team in Stockholm, where the number of citizens living with REDS has topped 15,000. In addition to setting up testing centers, REDS Relief will organize local support groups to help patients and loved ones cope with the chronic symptoms of the pandemic, such as violent coughing fits, wasting, and severe pain in the extremities. Stockholm is the first city outside of the tropical and subtropical hot zones to receive official REDS Relief, which also targets the long-term social and business impacts of Reds in regions where the workforce has been devastated. As the incurable illness spreads to new cities and the symptoms linger, there is growing concern that Reds Relief alone will be unable to meet the global demand for critical assistance. Berg Mantra writes, "We're grateful to the Reds Relief team, but they are already stretched too thin. We desperately need other kinds of help. What can we do in our own communities to provide Reds relief and support?" GS Volunteer Green Blade is broadcasting news from Atlanta. The giant Pacific Atlantic Insurance Company announced today that it will no longer offer healthcare packages to employers with offices in the red zone. Pacific Atlantic cites the costly long-term debilitation suffered by Reds victims, which has already led to the collapse of local health insurers in Florida, Texas, and Louisiana. Green Blade says, "This is a blow for workers everywhere, not just in the red zone. Anyone who works for a global company is likely to lose coverage now. Without traditional insurance, how can we pool our resources to protect our health?" GS Volunteer Okalu Samu is blogging from the Kenyan coast city of Mombasa, where private armed forces have flooded the city. These mercenaries are allegedly funded by the Saudis and are trying to quarantine the Nubian ethnic community. Politicians are chucking it up to the same old tribal conflict, but other GS volunteers have reported similar events unfolding in New Orleans and Marseille. Samu writes, "It's the combination of poverty, slums, and freelance armies that's producing all of these powder keg responses to contagion. How can we protect ourselves in this outbreak without taking up arms?" GS volunteer Elfrida reports that the Russian anti-Reds bacteriophage, MyDo4, has unexpectedly turned up in Pakistan. MyDo4, one of the only known viruses capable of infecting and killing the bacteria that cause respiratory distress syndrome, was developed last year by two Russian teens using a cheat to it-yourself biology toolkit. The Russian government arrested them when they started distributing it through open-source channels. Russian officials cited the dangers of unlicensed reproduction of any virus, but open-source scientists claim the Russians really want to own the virus. Elfrida says, "Pakistan needs this virus. I don't care how it got here. It just goes to show that governments can't decide who lives and who dies. How can we quickly invent and share new cures worldwide without introducing new dangers? Together we can survive the quarantine super threat." GS volunteers are organizing now at superstruckgame.org. Join us to invent the future of health. Welcome to the Global Extinction Awareness System. You are watching Super Threat Number 2, Ravenous. In 2019, the food supply chain is broken, so we're inventing new ways to feed ourselves. Hardest hit: Mexico, China, the Middle East, the processed food industry. GS volunteers report from the front lines of the ravenous super threat. GS volunteer Mama Kila reports from Monterrey City in Mexico, where more than 30,000 people have been rioting in the streets, after the price of tortilla flour quadrupled for the third time in as many months. Economists say the price hikes are the result of 2 years of drought and the world's insatiable demand for biofuels. Consumer anger was already stoked by rumors that as much as 95% of the corn crop this year would be tainted by toxins from polluted rivers and aquifers. Officials say such rumors are ridiculous, and anticipate only a 5% contamination rate. Mama Kila says, "If 5% of the population eats tainted corn, more than 5 million people will get sick or die." How can we balance the need for safe, affordable food with the need for new sources of energy? GS volunteer Mr. Z is live blogging from the Austrian Federated Railways OBB, where more than 100 university students have mounted trains with hatchets and biohazard bags. The students are calling for the slaughter of the region's chickens after several birds were found infected with the avian flu virus last week. Mr. Z reports, "All trains are currently stalled. Meanwhile, crowds are gathering along the tracks to support the students. I'd say the birds are doomed. What can we do to improve our day-to-day food safety?" GS volunteer Tom Well is texting updates from Centerport, New Zealand, where a citizen blockade has formed to prevent food cargoes from being transported into the country. Under the banner of zero tolerance no food imports, they are attempting to enforce a bottom-up local food movement. Other nations have threatened trade sanctions, but New Zealanders are most aggressively raising the flag of food self-sufficiency. Tomwell reports, I support the movement but not sure this helps the rest of NZ industries, especially our film and video game industry. We don't want to stop all trade, just food trade. When should we go food local and when should we stay globally connected? GS volunteer Shanti Girl writes with breaking news from Geneva. The World Trade Organization has formally rejected the International Panel on Global Food Modeling's recommendation to establish strict agroecological standards. The panel has argued that all WTO member countries must embrace agroecological science in order to avoid a collapse of the natural human food web by the end of this century. But WTO officials say that the proposed standards would place undue pressure on the world's global food industry, which is already under siege from a rash of processed foods lawsuits, localist food movements, and the high costs of staple foods and energy. Shanti Girl says, the WTO is trying to look out for our critical food industries. That's good, but we can't ignore basic ecology. We need joint solutions, not more food fighting. How can we help feed the world without destroying it? Together we can survive the ravenous super threat. GS volunteers are organizing now at superstruckgame.org. Join us to invent the future of food. Welcome to the Global Extinction Awareness System. You are watching Super Threat Number 3, Power Struggle. In 2019, we're all caught up in the alternative fuel wars, as the world fights over what will take the place of oil. Hardest hit, oil exporting nations, coal plants, auto workers, consumers everywhere. GS volunteers report from the front lines of the power struggle super threat. GS volunteer Cooper B is commemorating the third anniversary of the defeat of the Madrid Renewable Energy Accord, which would have set international standards for alternative energy technologies. It was 3 years ago today that the leading biotech nations of China, Russia, and Brazil faced off against the wind and solar powers in the US and the EU to throw the world into an energy stalemate. Cooper B writes, we could have chosen to work together. Instead, we got competing industries building technologies, products and infrastructures that just aren't compatible. And today we're paying the price. How can our competing industries and nations work together to break the grip of energy chaos? GS volunteer Carla Acosta updates us on the looting in Caracas. Several thousand youth have been wreaking havoc in the streets of the Venezuelan capital all week, after they were turned out of the government's oil revenue-funded safe harbor schools. The school closings represent an abrupt discontinuation of a major social experiment in poverty alleviation. Meanwhile, child poverty continues to climb in the disrupted oil economies of Ecuador, Nigeria, and Iran. Carla says, we know we can't count on oil wealth to feed our poor and fund our schools anymore. So what's next for the children in countries like ours? How can we create safe harbor for children around the world without depending on oil revenues? GS volunteer Jay Schiffer reports from Lusaka. This month, the millionth ethanol automobile will roll off the Zambian assembly line. Meanwhile, China, which invested in the Zambian plants, has just rejected Daimler Tesla's bid to build agile manufacturing plants for electric vehicles across China. The joint plan could have reduced automobile fuel emissions worldwide by 10% over the next 10 years, but would have weakened the ethanol industry and China's interests in Africa. Jay Schiffer says, the Zambians chose short-term gain at the expense of more global waste. Shouldn't they, and the Chinese, have to do something to offset those emissions? How can we act together to hold nations accountable for their waste? GS volunteer Brittany Chu reports from the outskirts of Bozeman, Montana, where three people died in this morning's violence at a makeshift camp for migrant wind farm workers. These migrants, many from the southern states of Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas, sought their fortunes in a region known as the Saudi Arabia of wind power. But angry locals say that the green wind power jobs belong to them. Brittany Chu blogs, from where we stand, the energy economy isn't keeping its promise. We need more green jobs, and we need them now. How can we create a stronger green energy economy and reduce unemployment from our fading carbon energy industries? GS volunteer Lin JR reports from Singapore that the docks at Pasir Panjang are eerily quiet today. Shipping giant Hansuk Logistics unexpectedly shut down its engines just hours ago, another victim of Walmart's price war with local fabbing services. As a result, billions of dollars worth of oil, as well as electronic energy monitors, hydrogen fuel cells, solar panels, and other high-tech energy products, stand effectively embargoed on Singapore's docks. Lin JR writes, "This is a country where the entire economy depends on shipping. Workers of every stripe will now struggle to put food on their tables. How can workers worldwide protect themselves against the cascading collapse of industry giants? Together we can survive the power struggle super threat." GS volunteers are organizing now at superstruckgame.org. Join us to invent the future of energy. Welcome to the Global Extinction Awareness System. You are watching Super Threat Number 4, Outlaw Planet. In 2019, the mobile internet and sensor networks we rely on to hold our societies together are being hacked, griefed, and gamed. Hardest hit, the democratic process, social networks, every institution connected to the internet. Volunteers report from the front lines of the Outlaw Planet Super Threat. GS volunteer Something Waffle 839 reports from Kuala Lumpur, where the Republican Bank of Malaysia was hit this morning by the third major online banking attack this week. Financial leaders believe the attacks are related to last month's breach of the Korea International Bank by hardcore players of the World of StarCraft game. Both hacked banks are major players in the virtual currency market. Something Waffle writes, "Internet security specialists are downplaying the attacks, but we know that these are just another example of the ongoing virtual assaults on the planet's basic operating infrastructure. How can we come together to secure our assets, both real and virtual?" GS volunteer Daily Jolt is live blogging from Washington, D.C., where representatives from the Electronic Frontier Foundation are about to testify in the ongoing hearings on last November's midterm elections. The group's testimony is expected to call for a do-over election, after hacking of voting systems left a third of the Senate and most House seats in question. Daily Jolt reports, "It's hard to believe that almost a year later, the courts are still battling over who will be seated. No wonder legal historians are calling the situation the biggest constitutional crisis in U.S. history. How can we uphold civic rights in network-enabled democracies?" GS volunteer OK Manny reports from the hotel in Mendocino, California, that media drones have successfully penetrated the secret conclave of state and federal officials who have been negotiating the terms of secession by four western states, including California. This is the first known use of drones for political coverage. Previously, they were limited to documenting celebrity life in our age of robotic paparazzi. The governor's office was swift to respond to this most recent intrusion, demanding that drone attacks be treated as felony crimes. But OK Manny says, "This is fantastic. Forget celebrity gossip. We can finally know what our governments are really up to. More drones, please." Who gets to set the rules for transparency in our society? GS volunteer John Vedpuri tells us that sensornet warnings from the Indian Ocean have sent thousands of South Asians rushing from the coastal areas into the hills. But the warnings are most likely spoofs of the tsunami warning system by pirates seeking cover for yet another heist of offshore oil. John Ved reports, "We are getting closer and closer to a boy who cried wolf scenario. It will be disaster when a true tsunami hits and we ignore it as just more sensor spam. How can we prevent spam from crippling our most important sensory networks? Together we can survive the Outlaw Planet super threat." GS volunteers are organizing now at superstruckgame.org. Join us to invent the future of security. Welcome to the Global Extinction Awareness System. You are watching Super Threat Number 5, Generation Exile. In 2019, our neighbors are climate refugees and economic collapse victims who are swarming the planet, looking for a habitable place to live. Hardest hit. Storm zones. Drought zones. War zones. GS volunteers report from the front lines of the Generation Exile super threat. GS volunteer Kaitone updates us on the underground hit Journey into the Wasteland, a documentary that has smashed previous peer-to-peer sharing records for full-length films. Journey into the Wasteland puts a personal face on the familiar statistics of 250 million climate change migrants worldwide. It follows five families seeking refuge in unfamiliar countries, from Canada to Denmark to Argentina. Kaitone reports, this movie goes beyond the shocking images of slums and ethnic violence that we're also used to seeing on the news. It shows us the real human costs of having an entire generation grow up as citizens of nowhere, without stable access to education, health, civic rights, or a national identity. How can we become better neighbors to the strangers who need us? GS volunteer Bogot 19 has breaking news. 10 Chinese youth on tourist visas were arrested for attacking a Tajik settlement in India, near the Chinese border. The youth are part of a renegade Chinese movement made up of so-called leftover children, who have had to fend for themselves in rural villages while their parents sought jobs in China's cities. Bogot 19 says, these kids have turned into fierce nationalists. They want to purge Western China of so-called foreign tribalists, and now they're bringing their fight to neighboring countries. What can we do to build loyalty beyond borders, to the entire human species? GS volunteer Steve X reports from Memphis, Tennessee, where dozens of local hotels and motels have installed anti-senior signs. Memphis is on the primary migration route for thousands of aging Gulf Coasters who are trying to escape both respiratory distress syndrome outbreaks and a harsh season of storms. The anti-senior movement argues that local resources are being overwhelmed by these temporary residents. Steve X writes, all of these seniors, they just want to return to their homes in paradise after things settle down, but they've become pariahs here. So where exactly are they supposed to be resettled? How can we help make temporary homes for displaced citizens? GS volunteer Anna Starr updates us from Sydney. The Australian government has just confirmed that its migrant watch system was breached by domestic hackers. The surveillance system was developed as a quote humane alternative to the detention of migrants pouring in from Malaysia and Indonesia. But the breach of the MWS now puts those migrants at elevated risk for identity theft and discrimination. Anna Starr says, those of us in the system have good reason to be afraid. What if the hackers sell our information to anti-migration protesters? It would be the perfect platform for organizing violent attacks against us, just like what happened in British Columbia. How can we track migration while still protecting identity? Together we can survive the Generation Exile super threat. GS volunteers are organizing now at superstructgame.org. Join us to invent the future of society. Welcome to the Global Extinction Awareness System. You are watching a GS special report, starting the countdown for the human species. GS President Audrey Chen says that humans may have just 23 years to go. She explains, the survival horizon is a point in time when a species is likely to suffer catastrophic collapse. According to Dr. Chen, GS models have given humans a definite deadline for making changes to our society and our planet. The simulations used over 70 petabytes of data, and point to five super threats. Taken together, these super threats set the survival horizon for humans to 2042. GS simulation engineer Samir Anu was surprised by the results. It just doesn't seem that bad today, he says. But he explains that the forecast is not the result of any single factor. Instead, five super threats combine to create the conditions for collapse. The threats alone will not bring us down. But they make us so weak that an additional crisis is too much to bear. The system collapses. In this case, the system is us. as volunteer director Michaela Robisoni urges people not to despair. She explains that we're not doomed. If we work together, we can rebuild our strength. We know that old ways of organizing the human race are no longer enough. They don't work in our highly connected world. They're not fast enough, or collaborative enough, or agile enough. We need new superstructures that can jumpstart a smarter human civilization. We need to invent the next era of human organization. This is the Superstruct Challenge. Together, we can reinvent the way the world works. Together, we can survive. GS volunteers are organizing now at superstructgame.org. Join us to invent the future of the human species.
My mind wants to cry out loud.